Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Collective Clicks podcast. This is your host, Brandon Bateman. And today I'm joined by Stephanie Betters. Stephanie has done a ton of stuff. We're going to dig into her background in just a minute. Stephanie is one of the people in this industry that I respect the most and really appreciate a good conversation with. In this conversation, we're going to talk all about how marketing turns into acquisitions, which is through lead management, like getting in contact with leads, CRM systems for that, and what kind of metrics to hold your team accountable to. Then we also talk about how you measure your marketing metrics in your CRM. So I think it's a really good tactical episode that just digs into a lot of the weeds. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, I think you'll enjoy it. Hey, Stephanie, how are you doing today?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, pretty fantastic. Thank you. I just heard you got back from CG this week. I didn't make it, but lots of traveling.
Yes, it was awesome. I was hanging out on the West Coast. Now I'm back on the East Coast.
Yeah, that's cool. It's funny because I love it when events are on the West Coast because they're so close to me. And I hate it when they're on the East Coast. We probably feel the opposite. But I got to tell you, you win way more often than I do on that. So I have the short end of the stick. So I'd like to think that a lot of the people listening like know who you are. If you wouldn't mind just sharing briefly like who you are, what you do, what your background is, so people understand the context of the conversation.
Okay, yeah, sure. I think I have kind of like a little weird story, so weird journey in the real estate space. So I'll try to be super brief. But I did not start off being a real estate investor. I started off being a nurse practitioner. And I thought like that was going to be it. I thought that was the dream, you know, where I was going to end up and retire from. And then I've gone on this beautiful journey that has led me a different way, which is cool. So super long story short, my husband and I we had a house hack in 2007 that kind of gave us the real estate bug. And right after we sold that, we went to grad school, him to be a physician assistant, me to be a NP, nurse practitioner. And then he really wanted to get back into it. And I was kind of on the fence. We went to school in Long Island, New York, and you know, very expensive to live and to be a young professional. So, and we didn't have family there. So we decided to move to Charlotte for the real estate market, but also because it was great for medicine jobs. So we started working in medicine. Like I said, that was my end game. I was like, we're good. Mm-hmm. 2 years passed and I was like, okay, we could buy some rentals. I see the picture here we're painting with, you know, long-term wealth building with buying rentals. And as I'm sure you've probably heard incessantly, like it takes a lot of cash to buy rentals and you need a lot of active income to buy rentals. And so we started building our residential real estate fix and flip wholesaling business to kind of fuel income so we could buy more rentals while we were still working full time. And let's see, probably 6 or 7 years into that business running, my husband left being a PA. Essentially, as soon as we had like financial freedom, he's like, I'm out of medicine. This is nuts. These hours are way too long. And I sat in there and struggled with that decision for a while because I really loved my job. I was working in heart surgery here in Charlotte. I loved my colleagues. I loved my patients. Although I loved doing what we were doing with real estate, I was just had a huge identity crisis. And so much went into that education and getting that job that I was so scared to leave. But 2 years ago, I did leave. So I left after 10 years. But while we were working our W-2 jobs and building our real estate company, we ran into lots of problems. Like, okay, lead management, data management, marketing challenges in general. And the one in particular that really fired me up was our CRM. There was not a really great CRM choice. This is like in 2018. We were spending $100,000 a month in marketing. I couldn't tell you what worked. I was like, I don't know. And I'm used to the medicine side. We're like, I have data. We get lab work. We get vital signs, like make decisions, right? And in real estate, I was like, I don't know. I mean, the phone rang. We got a deal. That's basically all I could have answered. And I, you know, kind of hit a wall and got really upset and tried to find a better solution, which there wasn't one. So I made one. And now,
very cool.
Fast forward, like, you know, here we go, my journey, you know, whatever, 10 plus years in. We have a real estate company that still does wholesales and new build construction, about 200 deals a year or so here in Charlotte, about half and half between those two product lines, wholesaling and new builds. And then I run our real estate, our CRM company, which is based on Salesforce called Left Main. So my husband runs a real estate company now and I run the software company. And I've since left medicine. Got three.
Very cool.
I'm part of lots of fun groups. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super cool. And obviously, sure. It's through those groups that we know each other and I've gained a lot of respect for you. And I don't think we can understate what you and your husband have accomplished. It's super cool. So, and it's part of the reason I'm grateful to have you here.
Better Path.
I'm sorry.
Is that Better Path is a customer of yours? Super happy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, we work together.
Yeah.
We run your PPC or something?
Yeah, you do.
That's very cool. I didn't even know that. I honestly did not even know that. So nope. I'm grateful that we worked together in that capacity too. That's hilarious. How did I not catch on to that?
I don't know. Some point. Your team is clearly amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah. Usually our best clients, I don't have to hear too much about. So you guys must be pretty good too. So that's awesome. So all that considered, I guess just being really open, like part of the reason I'm so excited to have you here is because you match like the theme of this podcast really well, which is this is kind of like, I feel like there's way too much BS in all areas of real estate. And we like to use data. We like to use numbers, make sound decisions and kind of cut through some of the myths, some of the thoughts that people have about things that just serve them wrong. Right. And we just end up like running in circles, trying to solve a problem one way when really we need to go a different way. So this being a podcast, it's mostly about marketing. I thought it'd be a really cool direction to kind of talk about the companion part of that, which is, you know, lead management, yeah. Right? Something that I've heard you mention to me many times is oftentimes it's not the marketing channel that's the problem. It's the lead management that's the problem. So that's something I want to dig into. And I know that's a lot of the reason, like, why you built the CRM product that you did. Yeah. And to be honest, like, nobody really used, in my opinion, based on what I saw, I didn't see anybody really using Salesforce in this industry until you kind of made it possible. And it wasn't really before then. And now so many of our clients are our left main customers. So that's cool to see how that's come full circle. But anyways, that considered, I know it's kind of a broad topic to start, but I really want to just like dive into the weeds and some of this stuff. Yeah. What would you say is like the most simple way to explain how, in your opinion, most investors are failing at lead management?
Well, I think that the biggest reason is that they don't have a dedicated process after thinking about live answer. And so I think really to answer this question, we really have to go all the way back to the basics of what was understood about how to monitor if a channel is working or not. And, you know, newsflash, all the channels work, right? Like we have like 20 different channels at this point. We have so many. But the problem really began with how real estate investors in general started measuring whether things worked. And that was all based on phone calls. So, and by the way, that's a great metric, but it's just not the only metric. So for example, you sent out a bunch of mail. Did you get phone calls in? How many phone calls did you get in? And did you live answer? And how many outbound phone calls are your teams making, right? It's very entry level, like dipping your toe in the water, like measuring lead management, right? It's really just incoming leads, and it's more like defensive metrics than offensive metrics. So defensive metrics are things that like just come inbound. Like, I put my stuff out and I generated leads. But offensive metrics is essentially what I did with that lead once I had it, right? So after the phone rang, okay, you live answered. What happened next? Or what if you missed the call? Or what if the lead was generated in a way that didn't answer, that didn't ring the phone? Like, they filled out a web form, right? The next question that people, or the next initiative that people say is like, oh, we got to call that lead as soon as humanly possible, right? So like a PPC lead comes in, they fill out a form. It didn't generate a phone call you could live answer, but what was that first attempt out, right? So, okay, we all know it's 5 minutes, right? The sooner we physically call a lead form, the better. But what if they didn't pick up? Now what? Okay, you made the first outbound call. You made that first activity within 5 minutes, but what's the rest of your lead process? And that's generally where people fail, right? So the current metrics of the number of attempts that it takes to contact a lead form, and this is across PPL, PPC, anyone who goes to your website and fills out a form, it takes approximately 14 attempts before you actually contact them. Like you receive a response back, or they pick up the phone, or they text back, or they email back, or whatever, what have you. 14 attempts. So what I've seen, and I'm super guilty of this in the past as well, we would make that first initial phone call, or maybe we'd even triple dial and they didn't pick up. And then we would maybe call tomorrow, or, you know, then we call tomorrow, they didn't pick up. Okay, we'll call in a week. Like we just all of a sudden just put that lead off in the future. And we didn't understand that key metric of being contacted. So once I personally started measuring the percentage of leads that I physically had a conversation with, everything changed. When I first started looking at that metric, it was like 60%, 70% of my leads were actually contacted. Meaning like we had tried, but then stopped or put them in a follow-up sequence. All of those leads were viable. I just stopped too soon, you know? So the next metric to look at is, yes, how many leads have you generated? How many phone calls have you generated? But what percentage of your leads have you physically talked to? And if you hold your lead management team accountable to that metric, everything changes, because now it's about quality, not necessarily that quantity. Both are important, of course, but the end result is that we talk to people, right? Not just we like check the box, I made an outbound call within 5 minutes, I'm going to talk to them next week, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where this lead management conversation starts. How many attempts on average does it take for you to contact somebody? Because once you contact them, now you can actually qualify it. So when we measure our lead channels and we're trying to answer that age-old question, is it a lead source problem? Is it a lead management problem? We look at what percentage of leads were contacted, and that is a lead management metric. And then what percentage of those contacted leads were qualified? That's a lead source metric, right? Because once I've contacted you and we talked about your house and you have a house in Timbuktu, okay, you're out of buy box. You're not even qualified. So, or take me off my list. I hate you. I'm going to kill your family. Okay, fine. You know, or, you know, they're retail and they're not qualified yet and they're a follow-up, right? Now that is giving me insight into the marketing channel, because I've physically had a conversation. You can't blame marketing until you've talked to them.
Yeah, that is super insightful. Thank you for sharing all that. I think it's funny because there's some things, I mean, all entrepreneurs kind of do this where like we kind of know better, but we still do the same dumb things. I can tell you one of those most common ones that I see across my clients is that like we'll ask them, hey, how long is it taking for you to get to leads? Yeah. Or how often are you contacting leads? And those kinds of things. And they'll just tell us, oh, we're always getting to leads immediately and we're super aggressive with the contact. This is what that looks like. And then we just dig into it. We're like, well, I just found that this lead looked good, but it wasn't contacted. Can we pull up your CRM and can we look at this? And like first contact was made after like 3 hours and then they've been called like once a day for a few days.
Right.
And like, that's it. Right. And it happens all the time where like the business owner, the way that they're measuring this, like, as you talk about actual like data and accountability in a system to measure these things. Unfortunately, what we see so many of our clients doing is the way they measure it is they ask their team, hey, you're getting the leads immediately. Right.
Right.
And their team, of course, assures them that they are when they're not, because the team, like, what I've noticed salespeople do is they just like remember the best case scenario that's ever happened. Like, yeah, I got a lead in yesterday and I called immediately when it came in and I got in touch with the person and it was a perfect lead and blah, blah, blah. But they don't talk about the 9 that they didn't call or something like that. So
it's really hard because perception becomes reality and our own bias can change our mind when we aren't looking at something objectively. And I'm super guilty of this too. Like a good example for me that I'm always guilty of is, I feel so busy. Like I've just done so much today. And I'm like, okay, what did I actually do? I made one phone call, I sent 3 emails, and I spent the rest of the day like stressing out about something that didn't even move the needle, right? But I felt super busy and like I did so much. Why didn't I get the result I wanted? But if I actually look at what I did in an objective way, I'm like, oh, well, it's because I actually only did a few things. Like I shouldn't stop wasting my time, like, you know, pulling my hair out. And it's
hard to be objective.
It's super hard. And that objective feedback loop also needs to be in a non-confrontational way for you personally or your team to not shut down. Because you want data to help you. You don't want data to like be in your face, like slap you in the face, you know? So if we get used to looking at things together on a daily basis and figure out what actually does help you do your job better, then data is your friend and can make you feel empowered instead of being disabled, you know? So a lot of those
100%.
What percentage of your leads did you contact? That should be a daily conversation. Like, okay, great. I'm getting towards that 90% metric. I want to make sure I get in contact with 90% of my leads instead of like, hey, when did you call that person first? And it's like pulling them out of a meeting or pulling them out of a phone call to try to answer a question that's in like, well, no, you didn't. Then it just feels terrible, you know?
Yeah. I totally understand what you're saying. One thing, sorry to get maybe a little too nitty gritty with this, but just talking specifically about some of the metrics I was talking about, I just want to share like some of the issues that I'm seeing on my side. And one of them is, like, let's just say you took gross leads and you look at how many are contacted. It kind of ignores the fact that not every gross lead really is a lead that can be contacted. Like, there are some that are spam or whatever the case is, right? So how do you deal with those kinds of situations? Like, do you just assume that like works into it, or do you like separate out those leads somehow and those metrics? I can tell you what we do is we have two separate metrics for our clients. We have the gross to net lead rate, which cuts out all the spam and stuff like that. And then we look at what percentage of the net leads are contacted. But even that's not perfect. Like, we just had a situation with a client this week where they have like a really high percentage of spam leads based on the feedback that they're giving us. And we look at it, we like can't figure out what's going on. And then we have the suspicion that like a lot of these leads could not actually be spam, that they're marking as spam. And then one of my team called a couple of them and asked them like, hey, are you trying to sell a house? And they like answered and they said, yes. And we're like, okay, well, the whoever their lead manager is was just saying like, cause it's suspicious. It's like, oh, all the leads are spam, or of those that aren't spam, 100% of them you contacted. That doesn't look right. How do you deal with those kinds of things? I guess is what I'm asking.
Very, very specific criteria. So I love this question. This is such a common thing and I love it. Okay. So a gross lead is anybody who's opted into anything. A net lead is anybody but spam, right? And so what is spam? Spam is like, oh, I'm calling you about your car insurance or whatever, right? Trying to sell you something, business to business services, right? Like, that is what spam is. Unqualified is different. Like, if somebody calls you and they don't have a house to sell, that's not spam. That's unqualified. They're like, I don't know, I thought I was playing a video game online. I filled out your thing. Okay, that's unqualified. That's different than spam. Same thing with somebody who's like, well, I'm not sure if I'm going to sell. I'm just trying to figure out what's happening, like what the value is of my house. That is follow-up or potentially unqualified, depending on how crazy strict you are. But that is not spam, right? And I think that sometimes the culture we have of like churning and trying to call someone first can also lend to quickly disqualifying people when they shouldn't be disqualified, or falsely labeling them as spam. Like, spam is very specifically something that makes absolutely no sense, right? Like I'm calling you about your tires on your car. Like, okay, that's spam. And I even have a tendency, depending on how frequency it is just to delete those. Like, just delete them out of your system. Don't even keep spam BS in your system. But to your point, if you have a huge uptick in spam, like maybe one of your numbers got placed somewhere, or you know, you need to, you know, one of your channels is infected of some in some way. So you do need to have a way of like labeling that and tracking it. But spam is literally only that. And I think being specific with that and teaching your lead managers, especially if they're overseas and don't know what these things mean, that has to be number one, you know?
Yeah. I totally understand. Yeah. We had a client just the other day get like name on lead, Tony Stark, like those kinds of things. You're like, wait, yeah, that's spam. But that's not normal. Right. And it should be clearly identifiable. One other metric you might be interested in. I recently did like a study across a few of our clients. And what we looked at is like on a per lead basis, how quickly was it contacted? And we put those into different buckets and we looked at how the whole funnel progresses based on that data. And what was really interesting is our clients that got to the lead slowly, or another even way to say is the leads that were gotten to slowly, maybe even from the same client that sometimes gets to leads fast, those leads had a higher contact rate than the ones that if we got to it quickly, then we had a higher contact rate than if we got to it slowly, which everybody expects that to happen, right? That's super standard. The thing that surprised me is looking deeper in the funnel, we had a way better opportunity to contract conversion if it was contacted quickly initially. And we had a huge number of opportunities per contract if it was contacted slowly. So I think there's this common bias that people have where they just assume like, okay, maybe I wasn't super quick, but I still got in touch with the lead, then it's fine. But I guess what we're seeing is the faster you get in touch with the lead, the greater likelihood that it becomes a contract later, even assuming you already got in touch with it, which is honestly not something that I expected to see until I saw the data. And then I thought that actually makes a lot of sense, like how it even affects your downstream metrics, which like reassures me, like, why it's so important that you hold people accountable to the result, like, and then, or, you know, you pay them based on the results, or whatever the case is, or getting in contact with the lead, but you still have to hold accountable to that process. So, like, just because you called after 10 minutes and you still got in touch with them doesn't mean that's okay if our standard is 60 seconds for new leads, or whatever the case is.
100%, because what happened? They had enough time to have a conversation with someone else, and then now you have competition, right? So, okay, you got an appointment, but so did three other people.
Exactly. Yep. And that's exactly what my hypothesis was. When I looked at it, I'm like, it's got to be a competitive thing, especially if you're looking at like a PPC lead. Like, do you think anybody has a hard time finding a wholesaler on Google? Like, type in "Sell My House Fast." You will find pages and pages on Google of all of your competitors. Do you think they only just reach out to you, or they only intend to reach out to you? No, they reach out to everybody, unless they reach out to you and then you call them so quick that, like, they're caught in their tracks, and then you have that kind of conversation with them that makes them feel like they don't need to go somewhere else, and that's the end of their search. But I don't think everybody thinks about it that way. But like, these, especially with PPC, because let's just say we're talking like Facebook ads or something like that. Okay, they saw your ad, they could see someone else's ad. Let's just say we're talking about TV, like, yeah, they could be seeing both ads, but PPC is the only place where they see your ad and everybody else's ad at the same time.
Exactly.
In an active search at that exact moment. It adds a whole new level of urgency.
100%. And I think if you miss them on the first outbound phone call, you have to, so you, not only, like you're saying, you have to have immediate action, but if you don't, and that's got a clock, like, what our standard is less than 5 minutes. You have to, and obviously the sooner the better. Don't hang up the phone if you're talking to somebody, to call somebody else. But within 5 minutes, you have to make that first outbound phone call physically from a human being. But you can text them right away automatically. You can email them right away automatically. Like, you can do things minute zero that will help you when you make that first outbound call. Because nothing's going to replace a human being calling another human being, right? Like, that's definitely gold standard. But all those things need to happen within the first 5 minutes. But if you make that first outbound call, maybe it is 5 minutes and somebody called them at 60 seconds, or maybe you called at 10 minutes and they called at five, and they don't, and whatever it is, when you made your outbound call and they didn't pick up, the first 90 minutes of activity is extremely important. Like, there needs to be massive outreach within the first 90 minutes. So you make the phone call within the first five, you call, you text, you email, and then you call, text, email again, and you do everything you can to get those 14 attempts done as soon as humanly possible. And I think that's the second piece that people drop in the management process. They're like, well, I called right away, I'm off the hook. No, you need to call 20 times within the first day. Because if you didn't get that answer the first time, for whatever reason, maybe it came in after hours and now it's 8 a.m., whatever, right? You have to make massive outreach for them to actually respond to you. And then now you actually have a chance. But if you gave up and you know, put it on for next week, like, that lead is going to be dead. You're not going to be able to close it or qualify it even, you know?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I highly doubt that anybody's listening to this and thinking, that's really dumb. I don't think anything that they're saying makes sense. Yeah. Highly doubt it. But where we all struggle is like implementing and knowing exactly, like, you know, my biggest pet peeve of businesses is when, like, you have KPIs that don't actually ensure that things are happening, right? So all your KPI scorecards are looking brilliant, but still things aren't working.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are there with their lead management. So like, I totally agree, right? Like, first contact matters a ton. Number of touches within 90 minutes, for example, matters a ton. Number of touches within 24 hours. And I think everybody would generally agree that, like, you start out heavier and then, you know, you're probably not going to call them 20 times a day after 6 months if they haven't picked up the phone, right? So there's some type of like gradual decline of that. But help me understand, like, where the rubber meets the road here. Like, what exactly is happening on a day-to-day basis? Like, what exact numbers are you recommending that people use where you think, like, if they measure the numbers that way, then they're most likely to ensure that they have a gapless lead management process?
I think the number one most important metric is the percentage of leads that you've contacted. I think that is more important
the result
than the number of leads that came in or your even first outbound call. That's the most important. And then incentivizing your team and or even just metricing them to that. Like, if you are a lead manager, you have a full-time lead manager and you are having a hard time hitting 90% contact rate, then you probably need more than one lead manager. And generally, that is the case, that you just have so many leads in your system that you physically can't do, you know, hit that 90% contacted ratio without additional help or additional automation. And I would not underestimate automatic text messages and even automatic emails. People are shocked. Like, emails do really well. And even mail, like, for example, a step one form where people just put in their address, right? And then they never fill out anything else, or maybe you don't even get their phone number. Just send them a piece of mail. You can look up the address and get their first and last name. That's easy. And if you have, you know, a CRM that can look that up, like LeftMain, fine. Look up who the owner is on record on that person and send them a letter. Like 10% of our step one forms respond to mail, but never respond to calling or texting when we try to skip trace them. Like, riddle me that. I don't get it. You opted in on the internet. Why you don't want to talk on the phone? I don't know. But if I send you a check letter, you call back 10% of the time. That's wild. You know, so sometimes you need to do some of these like companion channels where you introduce another way, just like retargeting, right? Like, okay, they went on your website, but they didn't fill out your form, but then you got them on Facebook. You can retarget with other outbound metrics too, besides just a phone call, like texting, emailing, mail.
Yeah, it's super insightful because, I mean, everybody has their own way that they like to be contacted. And it's not always the way that you like to talk to
people, right,
or your sales team likes to talk to people.
Right. And you know how some of these people are. Like, some are super financially distressed and they probably have a million people calling them all the time. They don't recognize phone numbers. So even if they filled out a form, they're not interested in responding to an incoming call. But they probably would open something that looks like a check if they're financially distressed, right? And so how quickly can we get a check out to somebody or a letter out to somebody? Kind of like when you get pulled over by the police and you get a speeding ticket, like you get 17 letters from lawyers, like, yeah, we'll get you out of that ticket, right? Takes a day or two, but then you get them. For whatever reason, people...
Feels like you're speaking from experience.
I got a speeding ticket for the first time in 10 years recently, and I was like...
I was just thinking, You don't seem like the kind of person that gets speeding tickets to me. Maybe I read you wrong.
Yeah, I got a Tesla. And the first week I got a Tesla, I got a speeding ticket because it was so much fun to drive. And I waited so long for the stupid thing to come. And then I was just like, it was totally clear. It was beautiful. You know, it was very safe on the highway. And anyway, I got a ticket. And then I got a letter like 2 days later from a ton of lawyers that could get me out of the ticket. And I was like, why aren't we doing this with real estate? Like, why? Obviously, like, you know, people are foreclosures or whatever, but what about if they fill out a form on my website or if someone I'm having a hard time getting a hold of, why don't I try to send them mail too? And I'm like, no lie, the response rate is right around 10%.
Yeah, that's high. That's really significant. So it sounds like to you, 90% is kind of the benchmark for the percentage of leads that we should be contacting. Over what time period is that? Is that like 90% measured out the first 24 hours or a week or a month?
Super good question. We it's a rolling total over the quarter. So like essentially every week you should be getting to the 90% mark, but sometimes you won't contact someone until later and that's totally fine. But for the quarter, you should be averaging 90%.
Understood. Okay. That's super helpful and actionable. Yeah. And I can tell you our clients average about 85%. Just for whatever reference point it is. And then our clients that are really on top of it often will be 90%, 92%, 93%.
It's huge. That little difference, that little lever is so beginning of funnel that if you can improve that, just that one KPI, you're going to make two more deals just because of how the conversions go down pipeline, you know?
Yeah. You know what like makes my blood boil from a salesperson? What? Says that a lead's not good because they don't answer the phone. Mm-hmm. Like they must not be that motivated. That's why they're not answering my phone call. And meanwhile, I'm just thinking like, they're probably not answering anybody's phone call. Right. If you can be the person that actually gets a hold of them, like that's a good lead.
Yeah, exactly. So try something else, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, it turns out commission's not the only way to make sales happen, right?
I know.
Like a lot of people have that mindset of like, oh, I'm paying them commission, so they'll just do whatever it takes. But like no salesperson's going to think, oh, let me just send a check letter.
Right.
No, nobody thinks that. That's why, you know, there's a combination here. Okay. That's super helpful. I feel like I have a better understanding of like how you view lead management. Is there anything else you'd say that's like a key thing where investors are just usually getting this wrong with lead management?
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing is just being too quick to disqualify folks or screen them out if they don't seem motivated. Right. So trying to be a little bit more objective with that is helpful. Like, for example, oh, I'm just checking the value of the house, right? And you're like, okay, well, tell me a little bit about the property. And they're on the hook enough that they're going to talk to you about the property. I'm not talking about those people who are like, oh, email me an offer. Those people put them in follow. But for the people who are like, well, I don't have to sell anytime soon. I'm just trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. I need to downsize or what have you. So here I am, you know, but I'm in no way in a rush. And they're on the phone with you and you're able to talk to them a little bit more. I think that a lot of times these people can undersell their motivation, but truly have a lot of repairs. So one of the ways that we qualify people and set an appointment, especially if they'll let us, right, is if they have old systems. So if you're on the call with us and you're like, oh, well, I'm in no rush. You know, I have a mortgage, but I have equity, you know, so I don't care. But my systems are 30 years old or they're original. This is a 1970s house. I've never replaced the roof or whatever. I'm going out to that house, right? No matter how cool they seem on the phone and not in a rush, and maybe I'm going to list it. I want to go out because those systems are old. And a lot of the times they're cool as a cucumber on the phone, but you get out there and they're a hoarder. Or they have so much distress and they just had a wall up on the phone because it was easy. But you see them face to face and they just kind of crumble. You know what I mean? So, you know, obviously the hallmarks of motivation are personal motivation, financial motivation, but don't forget about repair motivation. Like that is important to ask.
That's super cool. I totally agree. And honestly, I'm speaking out of my area of expertise if I'm talking about motivation. Like I've never been in a seller's house. I do notice some interesting things across our data, though. One thing that I've noticed in particular is that there's a strong bias usually of companies that are coming from outbound channels to inbound channels with how they qualify leads, because they're sort of used to assuming that a lead is unmotivated until you can prove that it is motivated, versus with a lot of our clients that are doing from the best from PPC and Facebook ads and SEO, we find that they're usually assuming that a lead is good and that it's motivated until they can really prove that it's not. 100%. And there's this continuum. You could picture on one side, it's we go on every possible appointment that we could ever go on. And then on the other side, it's we're cherry picking appointments. And everybody's just so afraid of being on the side where you waste time at appointments. But I can't even tell you how rare it is that we find a client with these channels that we manage specifically. Maybe this is super common across other channels, but it's so exceptionally rare that we find a client that has more than five appointments to get to a contract. There's a happy middle, right? I'm not saying you have to go every single possible appointment, but we find it so much more common that our clients are afraid to go on the appointment, afraid to waste the time. But all day, every day, we have clients that are overqualifying leads because they're afraid of underqualifying them. And it's so, so rare that we actually have a problem from underqualifying leads. This almost never happens.
I couldn't agree more. I think so. I'm very triggered by waste my time. Nobody says that to me because I get so upset. Nothing is, what do you mean waste your time? We just, especially after how much money we've just spent to generate a phone call or to generate a form, nothing is a waste of time. And if that's you saying it about yourself and you're the guy going out on the appointments, the girl going out on appointments, you're like, oh, I don't want to go out there. I've got all kinds of stuff going on. I don't want to go out there just to waste my time. That is a personnel issue. That is not a lead issue. That is 100% a personnel issue. And you need to fix that problem because it's not a waste of time. Nothing there is a waste of time. If you are worth your salt as a salesperson and you go out there and they're not a great fit, you just made a relationship and birds of a feather flock together. And what do you think is going to happen next? All that is extremely worth it, right? You've made a connection. These people likely have friends and family. This is a person in your community. You can get a good review out of this. Even if you tell someone, hey, I'm not the right fit, and ask them for a Google review. You can turn something into something, right? Just by even someone you can't physically help by telling the truth or being a human being, right? So, but like you said, what you'll find most of the time is that it's a deal. You just need to go on more appointments. And if you're burnt out and tired of going on appointments, then find somebody else to do it.
Yeah, that's a super fair thought. I think it's funny. Sometimes I think some of the best salespeople are almost delusional. So we took our clients that have the best lead conversion, because we measure this stuff full circle and how they're actually doing from a lead conversion standpoint. Because everybody talks a big game, but I took a few of the ones that are actually by our numbers performing really, really well. And I interviewed them and I interviewed their teams. And when I talked to their teams, the general feeling I got is this person's a delusional person. Because the reality of it is if they say it's going to be wasting my time, they're probably more likely to be right than they are to be wrong. because more often than not, a lead won't close. You will go on 5 appointments and only one of them will close into a contract, right? So if you're being logical, yeah, there's an 80% chance that that appointment is a waste of your time, technically, by like, if you all you're looking for is a closing, but you've got to do that to find the one that actually closes. You don't have like some instinct to know which one's which before you go there. But it's kind of like the person that just like keeps on going back to Vegas, like keeps on gambling and losing all their money. Like this time's going to be like the time where I like make it all back. I mean, just somehow like against all odds. Cause like the risk that you run is if you actually like logically realize that there's an 80% chance this won't be a contract, then that 80% chance turns into a 90% chance. But if you just really believe in that 20%, then it can increase the likelihood. So
I still disagree. It's not even a waste of time. Just because you didn't get a deal doesn't mean it was a waste of time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, fair point.
Ask your wife out. Like, was the first time you asked her that she said no or whatever, was that a waste? No, of course. It was just one step closer, right? Like, whatever, it's whatever you garnered out of that. It's the same way with sales. So you can never look at something like a waste of time. If you're doing that, that's truly a reflection of your own psyche that's unhealthy. Nothing is a waste of time. And if you're at, like I said, you don't get a deal, put them in follow-up. You can get them later or see what you can. Ask for a referral. You'd be shocked how many people are like, even if I can't help you, I'd love to help other people. If you have friends or family that need a solution, I'm here for it. You know how many times that we've gotten referrals from just stuff like that? Or even just a Google review for someone who came out and gave an honest opinion and honest help. And hey, we just helped you load your truck because we were here. Like, nothing is a waste of time. So just I think you have to be very, very cautious of the language that you speak in your organization. And that should not be allowed for anyone to talk like that, because it is so insidious and infectious that like you got to cut that out, because otherwise people start blaming lead sources and they start blaming everything else. The waste of time. It's just, don't do it. Don't say it.
I would 100% agree with you. I think that's super valid. One last thing I want to talk about, because we're risking going a little bit long here, but I really want to hear your opinion on this. You mentioned how sometimes there's the marketing channel that generates something, then there's kind of the marketing channel that assists.
Yes.
Honestly, I think this is a scary place for a lot of people to go, because it gets a little complicated to track these kinds of things. But we're also sort of living in an imaginary world if we just think that only one marketing channel ever has an effect on somebody coming into our business. So the reality is there can be many contributors to a deal getting done. Yeah. How do you approach that from like the standpoint of how your team views it, from a system standpoint, measuring marketing performance? Because I can tell you from my experience, 95% of real estate investors, basically every lead has a single marketing channel.
Yeah.
It's fully attributed to that. How much money did I spend on those marketing channels? How much revenue did I get on those marketing channels? And those are the numbers that decisions are made from. But it seems like you view it a little bit differently.
Yeah, I do. So I do think that there is a primary lead source, but generally there's multiple campaigns that have contributed to that lead even opting in. So this is actually one of the main motivators of me to go to Salesforce in general and build Left Main, was I needed to have a more nuanced way of understanding the customer's journey and what really created the opt-in. So we have lead sources and we have all the different channels that were used to outreach or even inbound. So, you know, briefly, if you get two leads and they're duplicates, you're like, oh, this is a duplicate. It doesn't count. It totally counts, right? Duplicates are fantastic. You just have to merge them so you understand, like, oh, they got a mail piece, or maybe I mailed them once, or maybe they called me the first time off of mail, but now they went to my website and opted in. Both lead channels, both sources there, campaigns, get credit for that. And we found that, especially over time and like hashing all this data, a significant portion of our leads had multiple channels or were, quote, duplicates, have opted in multiple ways. Or it took two channels running to get one opt-in. So we call those things companion marketing channels. It's the same as like if you plant tomatoes and you plant basil next to tomatoes, both plants do better because they are companion plants, right? Same thing with companion marketing channels. So we see these things with direct mail, PPC, PPC and TV, right? Like, or SEO and PPC, Facebook and PPC, right? There's a lot of things that complement each other. And if we are too strict in saying like, no, this was a PPC only, then we may discard TV ads being, you know, having helped PPC. So it's really important to have some UTM parameters and to consolidate all of your marketing efforts into one system so you can start to understand this, because then you're making better educated choices, right? And this is kind of how we discovered direct mail affecting stuff, right? Like when we sent direct mail to our PPC leads that filled out one form and didn't answer the phone, they called. I was like, well, why? That's weird. Was it the outreach or the preferred channel? Maybe. Maybe it was omnipresence. Maybe it was like, oh, this is a trusted source. I've seen their name before. Right? Like, there's a lot of psychological factors in play here that mean that contributes to somebody opting in. So don't be too strict in narrowing them down. And duplicates are a good thing. So if you have duplicates and people who are opting in multiple ways, those leads should be higher ranked. They're likely a lot more motivated. Even if they're cool as a cucumber on the phone, get out there. If they have two channels, you get out there on an appointment, or like you take that one serious, you know? So
yeah,
that's my spiel on campaign channels, but it's easier to measure if you have it all in one place, especially if you're doing prospecting. So if you're mailing a list or you're cold texting or you're cold calling, put it in your CRM as a prospect or, you know, some other different type of label if you're using a different system, so you can see them overlap. Because you'll find that your prospects are opting in other ways. And that means that your prospecting channel may be working, even if they're opting in through a different way, that the combined effort is helpful. Does that make sense?
Yeah. 100%. It makes sense. That's super cool. I think this is another one of those things where like everybody listening is probably like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. How you actually pull that off is... I think pretty difficult, because your marketing dashboard doesn't look so neat anymore, where it's just like lead source revenue, right? Because now we have like assisted conversions, and you know, how do you take all that stuff into account? Could you help me understand, like on a high level, like what, when you're looking at marketing channel performance based on these things, like what are the specific metrics that you're measuring?
So lead source for sure. So what was the last opt-in? So for example, maybe I cold called and cold texted a person, but then they opted in on my website. The lead source that gets credit, quote, like the parent credit or the master credit, the lead source is your website. Okay. But you can track that they were in multiple other campaigns. So you can actually stack this automatically in the CRM. Now there are a lot of different CRMs out there, and I'm not here to like pitch, but some are more powerful than others and able to do this a little bit more inherently, you know, than for systems and organizations that are used to having lots of outbound channels or outbound campaigns and things like that to track. So it's literally that simple. There is a kind of dominant lead source, and that's generally what the last opt-in was, but it can still track all the different campaigns that it was in, because they're listed there like a list stacker. Like you go on, you know, I can't even think of one off the top of my head, REI stacker or whatever. And all of your lists, and you can see when they're in multiple lists, it's the same thing.
Yep. That totally makes sense. Okay. So you're sort of looking at like which deals.
I can show you, like click a button. I can show you everything, but it's hard to physically explain. Yeah. Like be like, no, this really isn't too good to be true. You can see this really easily.
I would love to do that. Unfortunately, a podcast is probably not the best left main demo place, you know, for. Let's see if we can use words to paint a picture here. Like, cause a lot of this stuff is just hard to implement. But what I've heard about like feedback from Left Main is that the really cool thing is that a lot of this is just already baked into it. Like it's already been figured out for Salesforce. Does that include like metrics for tracking lead management and companion marketing channels and all those kinds of things?
That's all in it. That's the biggest premise of it, is having these metrics and dashboards pre-built for people so they can start understanding their data really immediately. As soon as your data is in there and you start getting calls and generating leads, these dashboards will auto-populate, and then you can kind of get an idea immediately and then ask better questions and make better decisions.
That's super cool. So if somebody's interested in Left Main specifically, how do they look into that?
You can email me, or you can go to our website, leftmainrei.com. And I'm Stephanie at leftmainrei.com.
Very cool. Highly encourage anybody interested in that to look at that. Look, Stephanie's not the kind of person who's going to shove the CRM down your throat and tell you it's amazing. But what I hope you recognize by this is where the inspiration for this comes from and the kinds of problems that Left Main solves. But I think if people understand that, they'll see definitely the value in what you built here. And I think everybody could stand to get significantly better at their marketing metrics. If you think of like, you know, a real estate investing business largely being a sales and marketing company, like the CRM is so, so core. It's like the foundational piece of the business. It's crazy.
Yeah, I agree. It's the lifeline. It's the business operating system. It's the center of the wheel.
Yeah. So that's super cool. Thanks a ton for being generous with your time today, Stephanie. I really enjoyed this. And thank you for everybody for listening. And I'll see you next week.